Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Yo, guys, welcome back to the show. Today we've got a very cool guest. That's Alex from Playing with Fire. And I first heard about Alex actually within the Leverage group. Some of the guys were talking about an online game strategy that they had been using that worked really effectively. And I'd heard some sort of rumorings of your name around the kind of like the manosphere or whatever. And then I saw you spoke at the 21 convention. I spoke back in 2019 and a few years prior to that. And then I checked out some of your content, thought it was dope. So happy to have you on the show.
Man, thanks for coming, man. I honestly know absolutely nothing about your platform. So this is going to be, wherever this goes, I'm cool with it. So let's see what happens.
Cool. So why don't you just kind of start with your background? How'd you get into game?
I got into game 2012 when I read the book, The Game. But I was doing like pickup without even knowing what I was doing around by the time I was 18. So 2008, when I got to college, all my friends were like my high school friends weren't really that good with girls. So I could like backwards rationalize why I wasn't having success. I was like, well, no one's having success. But when I got to college, I had like a new group of friends and they were all like pretty good and they were all getting laid. So I was like, fuck, you know, I'm like the only virgin in my group. So I started going out to parties, trying to approach girls and failing at it over and over again. I didn't lose my virginity until about a year later when I was, the summer between freshman and sophomore year of college on a beach in Mexico. But yeah, even after that, it was like a very slow start. It took me another year and a half before I had sex for the second time. So I was kind of all throughout college, I was trying to get laid, mostly failing, having like a little bit of success once in a while. And then 2012, one of my really good friends gave me the book, The Game. So I read the book, The Game. I literally sat down. I didn't get up until I finished reading it. It was all in one sitting. And that's kind of how I started.
That's a similar story to me. I also kind of read it in like one sitting. I'm a slow reader, so it probably took me like 2 days. Mm. But I started around the same sort of time, like right towards the end of college. And I had a similar experience. A bunch of the guys I hung out with would, you know, we'd go to the bars in San Diego and they'd pull and I wouldn't. But they were like good looking tall surfer dudes. And I was kind of chubby at the time and, you know, just not not competing. So I kind of turned to that. So how did you become like an online dating expert? It was just one of the things that you found a lot of success with? And
yeah, it was also kind
or
of
did
my...
you like, did you start with like approaching a day game and all that shit?
Yes, it was kind of by accident. I, for the first like 3-4 years, when I learned about pickup, I didn't even really do online. 2-3 years probably. I was just doing exclusively cold approach. I actually started getting into online, like getting laid online through Craigslist. There was, I was reading like a community post or like a forum post where one guy was talking about how he made a post under Craigslist for like a very 50 Shades of Grey style like ad, and he banged a girl from that. And I was like, well, this isn't even written that well. I could write this better. So I wrote a much better, version of an ad. And it was just kind of like an experiment. I didn't actually think it was going to work. I was just like, I didn't even check my email for like 2 hours. And I look at my email and I have like, you know, a lot of spam, obviously. But there's also one chick who was like, hey, I love your ad. I'm free tonight. Let's hang out. And then I wound up meeting up with her and hooking up with her. And I was like, holy shit, this is way easier than cold approach. So that kind of opened up my eyes to like how easy and like efficient online can be. So I started doing Tinder maybe like a few months after that. But in terms of why like I specifically started focusing on it, it came down to the fact that around 2016, I started working like a really busy corporate job where I was working like 60, 70 hours a week. So I didn't really have time to do like cold approach anymore. But, you know, I was still trying to get laid. So I was like, while I was at work and shit or like stuck in traffic, I was always like on apps. So it just wound up that I was spending a lot more time on dating apps than I was doing cold approach during that time period. And then, yeah, that's kind of how the reason they became like primarily online is just like, I do cold approach and I, you know, I like it. It's just that like during that time period when I was like creating my my website and my Facebook group, I was just primarily doing online due to my work schedule.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I think like the guys I coach, you know, I'm always telling them that, you know, you got a few different funnels as far as dating goes. You got like cold approach. You know, approaching into social environment, you know, guys call it like night game or whatever. You got day game, you got social circle, and then you got online. Have you found, and you know, some of the guys that I find, like, most of my clients who are, you know, decent looking guys and they can get pretty good photos and stuff, they usually have a lot more success, obviously. Yeah. Some of the guys that aren't as good looking and or maybe shorter, you know, complain that it's a lot tougher of an environment just because of they're dealing with that. But, you know, I don't think that's a reason why to not do it. I'm constantly telling them there's shit they can do. They can, you know, buy shoes that are a little bit taller, lie about their height a little bit. Do you have anything specific that you say to guys who are like shorter or who kind of written off online game is like, that's just not working for me. I'm not good looking enough. I'm just like,
yeah, pretty much every single time I've seen someone like say that online game doesn't work. My response is always, well, let me see your profile. And literally every single time the photos suck. I have never once had a case where someone was like, yeah, online game doesn't work. And I thought like, oh wow, you already maxed everything out. Your photos are good. I don't think that's ever happened once. So typically, yeah, the reason guys aren't having success is because their photos are not good. They might think the photos are good. Maybe the photos were even taken by a professional photographer, but it doesn't actually make the photos good. If for a photo to be good, you need to one look.
Dude, that's the worst when these guys are, I was just saying it's the worst when you know, I'll get clients too. They're like, yeah, I'm going to have a professional photo shoot done for my online dating profile. I'm like, dude, you don't know how to dress. You're not going to get the right photos taken. You're going to look like a total idiot, like a monkey in a suit. And the poses are going to be all wrong. And I feel like this is happening a lot. Do you see those guys, like, basically, they're hiring photographers to take professional photos, but the photos end up sucking because of they don't know what the fuck
to do. I see a lot of that. I think a big part of the blame is on the photographers, though. I think a lot of the professional photographers have no idea how to take Tinder photos. So I would put, like, probably 70% of the blame actually on the photographers. It's, dude, I don't know. I've just seen so many professional photographers come out with photos that are like 100 times worse than I could take on my iPhone, honestly. So there are some good professional photographers out there, and you know, I've talked about them on my channel, but I would say like the majority of photographers, maybe they're okay for taking like LinkedIn or resume photos, but they're not good at taking dating photos. It's quite different. You can't be posed. And really what a good photographer is supposed to do, he's supposed to help you get in a mindset where you're actually relaxed and you have good body language and good facial expression. So for example, if I'm taking a photo of my friend and I see they're a little tense, I'm not gonna keep taking photos. I'm gonna be like, yo, dude, remember that one time, blah, 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 and they'll start laughing, blah, 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 and then I take the photos. That's actually what a photographer is supposed to do, a good one. Most of them don't do that. But yeah, it is frustrating. I feel bad for the guys. I've heard stories, guys are like, yeah, dude, I spent $2,000 on this photo shoot. I'm like, damn, every single photo sucks. So yeah, it's rough. I can empathize with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not the photographer's fault either, unless they specialize in like online dating, and even that I'd kind of be suspect. But you know some actual photographers that do specialize in that.
Yeah, I know some really good photographers for sure. Like if you go on my Instagram, you can see like the photos of me that I have up there. Like the recent ones, they were taken by a professional photographer who knew what he was doing. Yeah, I always when I get a good professional photographer, I always like, you know, give him a shout out for free. But yeah, I mean, like a lot of, okay, I will say, yes, part of the responsibility is on the person, because you should ask, I always say, ask the photographer if they have any experience with taking like photos for online dating. But the problem is a lot of photographers will kind of brush it off and be like, oh yeah, no problem, I can do that. When like really they don't know how to do that, right? Because how often are you going to see a photographer being like, yeah, you know what, right, I cannot take that kind of photo, right? They're always going to kind of like smooth talk it, you know, so... Yeah, I think it's joint responsibility. But really what I recommend guys to do is make sure you ask for their portfolio and look for yourself if they have the kind of photos that you need. Like, and anything short of that, I would not work with someone.
I mean, I feel like I went on your site and I checked out some of your tips for photography. I feel like if guys just, you know, listen to your advice about what sort of photos to take, they could just have a buddy take them.
They definitely
can. You know, on their iPhone, which is...
Well, I have a whole video. I have a whole video how to do a photo shoot at home where I actually walk guys through how to have your friend take photos of you. But yeah, you can definitely do that.
What about other sort of like just the profile basics, setting it up? Any advice for that as far as like, you know, writing your bio?
Yeah, well, the first important thing is like, of course, pictures are like the vast majority of it. So guys sometimes think that like, you know, if they have a really good bio that can compensate for bad photos. Fortunately, it doesn't work that way. If you have bad photos, you're not going to get results. For the bio, yeah, I mean, I have a few videos and articles on it, but basically, you don't want to treat it like a resume, like a lot of people treat like a resume, and they're like listing off their accomplishments. You want to be more like, you know, kind of fun, flirty, witty. I typically like to put some sexualization in my bio to screen out all the girls who are like super prude or whatever, conservative. So yeah, I think a bio should be a combination of like humor, fun facts, sexualization, like, you know, stuff like that.
Support for the Leverage Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. They are the best in taking care of your balls. This just in, we save balls. They really do. So I've been looking for a product to help me, you know, manscape for a while now. Usually I just use a traditional, like, you know, razor shaver thing that I find wherever I can find it. And I'm constantly cutting myself up, nicking myself, but not with Manscaped. Let me tell you, I tried this thing out. They sent me this product and no nicks, no cuts, no scratches, just smooth babies down there. I mean, if you guys aren't shaving your balls, what the hell are you doing? You know, especially, like, I don't care if you're single, in a relationship, no girl wants to smell or look at your disgusting pubes. Not only that, but, like, you know, in Ukraine, it's pretty normal to even, like, shave your armpits. I keep those things clean. So make sure you get your hands on one of these. Not only that, but it comes with a handy-dandy nose trimmer. Where's that nose trimmer? Babe, would you steal my nose trimmer again? Let's see. And this beautiful pouch, too. So not only that, but you can use this sucker on there. Oh, yeah. Nothing. This thing, we got Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant. Amazing. Crop Reviver Ball Toner. When you put these on your on your boys down there, they feel amazing. So, I mean, I'll tell you guys a little secret. I've been having my my wife occasionally help me shave down there. Baby, what do you feel? How do you feel about my my boys after I use this?
I feel great. I don't need to shave them anymore.
But you like shaving them, I thought.
No. And now they're just beautiful.
So seriously, guys, go over to manscaped.com. For a 20% discount, enter the code LEVERAGE in all caps. As the name of this podcast, LEVERAGE, LEVERAGE. Get 20% off your shipping for this. It comes in an amazing box saying, your balls will thank you. And really, they will.
They will definitely thank you.
And your girlfriend, your wife will thank you too. Because now you have fresh, smooth, silky balls when you use all the awesome stuff. It's the Manscaped 4.0 package. It's incredible. So don't forget, go on over there, get that code 20% off by using Leverage, and enjoy some nice, toasty, fresh, not toasty, just fresh. Just fresh babies.
Yeah.
Do you feel like online dating's gotten harder in the recent months or years?
In America, yeah.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of feedback. Why do you think that is?
More competitive, more. So when Tinder first came out in like 2012, it was kind of the new thing. Not a lot of people knew about it. I think Tinder was its golden era, like around 2014, 2015, about a year or two after it came out. So, you know, everyone was downloading it. It was a cool thing to do. No one was like really bitter. No one was really that worried about catfish. It was like the cool thing. And then what you start happening is you start, you know, some girl gets catfish. She tells her friends. She leaves Tinder. They leave Tinder. Oh, like it's only for fuckboys. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to be on there. And now you're at a point where Tinder is like 75, 80% men, right? So just the ratio is just like really bad. And a lot of the girls who are on there are like very jaded and guarded because they've had bad experiences. So, yeah, it's usually like that with anything. Like something like, you know, it's at its peak and then it just kind of goes downhill. Unless like that company is really good at like troubleshooting for future issues, but yeah. So I just think it's like the ratio, and that would probably be the biggest factor. And it's also more competitive. There's just a lot more dudes on there.
Do you feel the same way? Do you feel the same way about like Bumble and Hinge
Bumble and Hinge are a little better, but it's all the same thing. All of them have gone harder in the last few years.
What about the more sugar daddy sites like Seeking? Luxy, do you have any experience on
with
those?
Seeking, yeah. Actually, Luxy, I think Luxy sent me an email. They wanted me to like, they wanted to sponsor one of my videos, but I turned them down for whatever reason. But yeah, Seeking, I fucked around with quite a good amount. So Seeking is definitely going to be easier if you know what you're doing than, and I'm assuming we're talking about like when you're using the website just as a dating tool. Like if you actually want to pay for sex, then it's like super duper easy. But if we're talking about just using it as a way
to, let's leave that aside.
If we're assuming we're talking about just as a way to meet girls, like, you know, like the real way, Seeking is, if you know what you're doing, is definitely easier than all the other dating apps. It still also has gotten harder. I think I found out about Seeking 2018, and it's harder now than it was 4 years ago. And again, it just has to do with competitiveness. And so that kind of stuff. But it's easier than all the other dating apps, again, if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I started using Seeking back in 2017, and I immediately noticed the, you know, obviously you got to weed out the pros, but the general quality in terms of like hotness was definitely better.
But then the average quality in terms of personality, you know, is worse. You're also, that's kind of a trade-off.
Exactly. You got the, you know, personality disorder on the rise and the narcissism
hotter
and all
girls
that shit.
Personality.
So you definitely have to. That's, yeah, basically always how it goes. But I found that like most guys that say like, oh, I don't want to use that sort of site, they think every girl on there is like trying to get paid and knows what they're doing. But my advice is like, no, girls are just on there like kicking the tires, seeing how it works. And especially if you can meet a girl who's like new to the site, she doesn't know what the fuck she wants. She's not like a pro looking for an arrangement. She's probably just looking for a cool boyfriend who's not broke.
Yeah, exactly. There's I kind of broke this down. There's five types of girls on Seeking. The first is the professional sugar babies / prostitutes. And that's going to be like this one category compromises like 60-70% of the website, right? So these girls, no amount of game is going to work. They just want to get paid for sex. So you just got to screen those out. The second category is a beginner sugar baby. She's thinking about doing it, but she's not sure. She's new to the website. You know, she's open to getting paid for sex, but she's also open to meeting someone like the regular way. So those are going to be probably your bread and butter. Then below that, you have the girls who are just looking for a relationship with a guy who's successful, right? They're tired of dating losers. They don't want any money. Mm-hmm. In fact, they might be even offended if like someone was to offer them money. They just want a guy. They just want to meet a successful guy who has his shit together. There might be like 5% of the website or something like that. Below that, you have the BDSM fetish girls. So these are the girls who read 50 Shades of Grey, and they think that they can find their Christian Grey on Seeking. Yeah, they don't care about money. They just want a guy who's like super dominant, probably an older guy, right? I think that was four categories. I forget what the fifth one is. But yeah, maybe it's four categories. But yeah, those are the categories, right? And you just got to know how to decide which category the girl's in.
I like that. And kind of going back to the BDSM thing, how did you get into that? Is that something that you like figured would be beneficial for like your dating life and for online dating, and you got into that, or were you like actually interested in that?
Yeah, well, like full disclosure, kind of, like I'm not like balls deep in the BDSM community. Like if you talk to like people who are really into BDSM, they'd call me like an amateur probably, and that would probably be well deserved. It just, I don't know, man. Like, I think I was like, I don't know, when I was like, started getting laid regularly, one chick was like, slap my ass. I'm like, all right. I'm like, ooh, this feels pretty good. Hey, do you have any toys? I'm like, yeah, I guess I could order a paddle. Oh, let me pop into Amazon. Oh, here's a nice paddle. Ooh, this is fun. Ooh, I like this, right? Oh, fuck, handcuffs. That could be pretty fun. Okay, let me handcuff this girl, right? So just kind of like organically, like, I just started discovering it. But I've just noticed that a lot of girls, especially again after 50 Shades of Grey, are really curious about BDSM. So if you just put like, you know, BDSM in your Tinder profile, you're going to have a lot of girls who are curious and want to try it out with you. So I think that's like a nice hook. But I don't think you have to be like super into it. You just kind of like, you know, like, are you into slapping a girl's ass? Are you into using a paddle? Are you into handcuffs? Yeah, you can say you're into BDSM then, you know, like you don't have to be like super balls deep in the community.
Most people I know that are super balls deep into it are weird anyway.
I 100%
so
agree with that.
That's probably a good level to get there.
I very much agree with that.
In terms of like kind of injecting sexuality into your profile, is there anything else that you do besides the BDSM stuff? Any advice that you have on that? Because that's one of those big things that I feel like guys fuck up. They either go way too sexual or they sexualize zero.
Yeah.
So do you have any advice on like how they can kind of find that sweet
spot? Yeah, well, I think it starts with your profile. So for example, I'll have like a shirtless photo, right, in my profile, like as number two or number three. That kind of starts painting the picture. Like no girl's going to look at my profile and be like, I think he's the kind of guy that is really looking for a serious relationship, right? So you're painting the picture from the start. Typically when guys run into trouble with sexualizing is the girl thinks they're like very like safe, or, you know, they're like a sweetheart, and then they become sexual and the girl's like, whoa, it's not the sexualization, it's the incongruence between what her image is and what's actually happening.
Right.
But if you're sexual from the start, you're not going to get those kind of negative reactions. In my bio, I say dominant, I say BDSM. I have like PS, it says blindfolds are much more fun than turning lights off. So like little things like that, that shows that like, yo, I'm looking for something sexual. And then when I'm texting the girl, you know, I don't start off on a sexual note right away, right? At first it's like fairly standard and platonic, but then, you know, I introduce like sexual innuendos. I like to use humor a lot to sexualize. Stuff like that. And then that'll make things a lot more sexual. And then I'll typically invite the girl straight over my place. So that also paints the picture. Yeah, so it's kind of a very progressive thing.
What do you feel about having photos that kind of show off social proof? Like, if you've got a photo with two or three chicks and they're all good looking, like, obviously you probably wouldn't want to post a photo with just you and one girl because it'll look like your girlfriend. But what about multiple girls who are hot, like, and you kind of looking like, you know, maybe a little bit fuckboyish in that photo? But is that, would you say, good, you know, good or
bad? I think social proof photos are highly overrated. I don't think they're necessary. I don't have any in my profile. Some of the best guys I know don't have any. They can actually be useful if done right. The problem is 95% of guys do them wrong. So either they're taking photos with just one girl, or the girls are ugly, or the girls look uncomfortable in the photo, or it just kind of looks creepy vibe. So I think the kind of photo you want if you are going to do social proof is like a group, like maybe one or two cool looking guys, a few hot girls, you're at like a pool party during the daytime, so it's just like you're hanging out with your friends. But what a lot of guys have is just like them at a club hovering over girls, right? And that doesn't do them any favors. But yeah, I think they can be useful, but I think they're highly overrated and they're not necessary.
The more photos, the better, or better to,
well, you're,
to
you're,
have like just
you're
more
only as good as your worst photo. So if you have five photos where you look like an 8 and one photo where you look like a 6, the girl's gonna think you're a 6. So you don't want to just put more in for the sake of having more. I think if you have like 4 or 5, you're good. You're not really going to get any big benefit of throwing in more, like once you get past like 4 or 5. So I would just pick the 4 or 5 of the best ones and kind of leave it at that.
Do you find, in terms of like, you know, one thing I like that you say is you want to be congruent with what you're looking for. So if you're not looking for a girlfriend, like, don't put out the vibe that, you know, you're like a nice guy looking for, like, you want to, if you want to be non-monogamous, you can kind of put out that vibe and you'll attract those girls. Do you find that hurts the quality at all?
No, I don't see any correlation between a girl, how DTF a girl is and her hotness. I've never seen that. I don't know. Like, some of the hottest girls I ever hooked up with were girls that were just like really horny and DTF, and they were like really easy. So if we're talking about quality as a person, you could make that argument. But quality in terms of looks, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I was asking about looks, so. And I agree. I think all girls, regardless of how hot they are, you know, have that side they want to explore. It's just kind of catching them at the right time, you know, if they're looking for that or not.
Yeah, there's like this idea in like the manosphere that like there's two types of girls. There's like the sluts, who are just like these like bestial average looking creatures who walk around with like loads of cum on them. And then there's like the quality girls who are very conservative and you have to go on multiple dates with them. And it's a very incorrect paradigm. In reality is there's hot girls everywhere. Girls love sex. Girls are willing to have sex fairly quickly with the right guy, unless there's some strong religious, you know, thing going there. So yeah, it's just like, it's an incorrect paradigm to view the world through.
Yeah, it's fucked up too. I mean, I love sluts. I'm a fucking slut. You know, the whole sort of like, oh, she's a slut or she's, yeah, it's, that judgy bullshit won't really get anywhere. A lot of the guys that I work with say they get better quality offline, and they've complained that the hottest girls don't use online dating. That may have been true a few years ago, but I feel like as time goes on, like, not every hot girl, they're all going to have a profile at least. But have you found any like correlation between like the quality of girls you can get online versus offline?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I will say this. Pretty much every single girl, no matter how hot she is or how ugly she is, at one point or another was on a dating app. They're just too mainstream, too popular. Like, that chick that you think would never be on Tinder is probably on Tinder. She's just not swiping right on you. So that's what I would say the first thing is. But in terms of like, I think potentially, I'll say it like this. You can get super hot girls on dating apps. But if we're talking about purely in terms of averages, if you have good cold approach skills, like solid cold approach skills, yes, I do think you could probably do a little bit better offline than you can do online. But that assumes that, you have really good cold approach skills, which 99% of guys don't.
Yeah, that's harder to build. I feel like for most guys that are getting started, you know, if they haven't built those skills yet, online dating is a great place to you know, build your texting skills, you know, improve your fashion and like kind of get the pillars in place that make you an attractive man. What about for guys who were like, do you find that there's any sort of guys that it just doesn't work for?
Are we talking about swimming?
Overweight, too short? Is there like a too short threshold?
I mean, the shorter you are, the harder it's going to be. There's no denying that. If you're like 5'2", Yeah, that's going to be a fucking struggle. Although I did used to have a roommate who was 5'3". Crazy motherfucker. Not a good guy. But he was pulling chicks quite often from Tinder. They weren't the hottest girls, right? But then again, this guy was 5'3". So, you know, like, how picky can you be when you're 5'3"? But he was pulling a good amount of girls. Like, right. I saw with my own eyes. They just probably weren't girls that I would fuck, but they weren't, like, terrible. They're just, like, very basic and average. Yeah, I think if you're super-duper short, like 5'2", 5'3", then, yeah, it's going to be very, very rough. But anything is going to be very rough. Even cold approach is going to be very rough. It's not like girls just drop their physical standards if you approach them on the street. They might be, like, more willing to overlook certain things, but she's not going to be willing to overlook a guy being shorter than her. Like, that's just, you know, there's, like, a girl might give you a bit more benefit of the doubt if you approach her on the street. Like, he's not exactly my type, but he's pretty charming, right? But it's not going to be, like, a drastic thing, like, oh, my physical standards don't apply. So I think if you're a 5'2", any kind of game, unfortunately, is going to be very hard for you. But, yeah, I think online will be, like, extra difficult. But if you once you get past, like, 5'5", 5'6", I think it's definitely doable.
What about, you know, different cities? Like, I've used online dating in Eastern Europe, South America, all over the U.S., you know, Miami, L.A., New York, a little bit in Western Europe, Berlin, those sort of places. Have you, and I've definitely seen similarities with the U.S. and Western Europe. I've seen a lot of similarities with Eastern Europe and South America. Do you have any thoughts on those places? I know you've traveled.
Well, America's probably one of the hardest, and again, like, there's different cities in America, but as a whole, America's probably going to be one of the hardest countries, with the exception of, like, some super religious country like Saudi Arabia or something like that. Latin America, South America is significantly easier. You get, like, way more matches there. The girls are way more compliant. Eastern Europe is also definitely easier from what I've seen. The one cool thing about Eastern Europe is people are pretty reliable there. So there's, like, not really any flaking in Eastern Europe. Like, you just, if you make plans with a girl, she's probably going to show up unless something, like, really crazy happens to her. Like, she gets hit by a car. In Latin America, I would say it's like a 50% flake rate. So you make plans with two girls, one of them shows up. But you have so much volume in Latin America that it doesn't matter, you know, because you're talking to, like, 50 girls a day. America really just depends on where you are. But, like, where I live in Miami, yeah, there's, like, a lot of flaking. Like, if you want to, I would put like this. If you want to, like, get laid on Friday night, you want to meet up with a girl on Friday night, you have to set up, like, 3 or 4 dates so that one girl shows up, right? There's a lot of flaking there. Yeah, for sure. And, like, other cities, like, you know, Los Angeles. But, yeah, but if you go to, like, outside of Miami, if you go to, like, Pittsburgh or Cincinnati, you know, it might be closer to that 50% flake rate that you see in Latin America.
Are you scheduling, like, multiple dates the same night and then flaking on whichever one you like the least if none of them flake? Are you going that far?
I do have to do that. What I'll do is I'll schedule them, like, different times, like one for 6 p.m., one for 8 p.m., one for 10 p.m. But also, is like, you know, that day of, you kind of have a pretty good vibe of who's going to show up, who's going to flake. You know, maybe they confirm, maybe they're being, like, giving you one-word answers. So you can typically mitigate the damage and, like, you know, like, not really have to flake last minute on girls. But, yeah, I've definitely had to do that in the past. And I think that, like, if you live in a city like Miami or LA, there's no ways around that.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of, like, I know what you do is you basically, you know, you're aiming to get them to come straight over, right? Do you feel like that? What percentage of the time does that sort of work out? Like, how often do they want to, you know, meet a coffee shop or meet, like, down the street from your place as the first venue instead of coming straight
over?
I'd
say, like, 60% of the time it works out. 30 to 40% of the time they ask to meet in public, like that. Like, slightly more than half.
And you're, like, I'm guessing your, like, close rate by the time they get to your place is pretty high, given, you know, you've done all the kind of hard work to get them there in the first place.
Yeah, if a girl is willing to come straight over, like, unless something, like, really crazy happens, you're probably going to bang her. There's always exceptions. Like, you know, there's been exceptions where a girl maybe was, like, just super oblivious to the, you know, to the, like, the innuendo and, like, the situation. And is like, no, I legitimately thought we were, like, getting to know each other. You know, that does happen very rarely, but that does happen. If the girl's meeting in public, I mean, with those, maybe it would be, like, 60 or 70% of those you would hook up with on the first night. I would still probably pull more than half back to my place. But yeah, if the girl's willing to come over, then yeah, it's going to be like most of them you're going to hook up with if you're interested. Sometimes they don't look like their photos and you're not interested, but assuming you are interested, you can hook up with most of them.
Yeah, how talking about that, like, how often do you feel you get fooled or guys that you work with get fooled by girls just, like, having photos that don't, you know, accurately represent themselves?
I think it happens a pretty decent amount of time. I've gotten a lot better at like screening it out. So nowadays, like, I always ask for Instagram. If they don't have a lot of photos on their Instagram, I insist that they send me photos. So nowadays, I'm like super careful. But if you're not doing that, yeah, it can happen pretty often. I'm also like really picky. So for me, like, if a girl shows up and she's like 15 pounds heavier, I think a lot of guys would still bang. But like, I'm just like, hey, sorry, I'm not feeling it. Like, I'm at a point where I'm just not going to fuck a girl who I'm not really attracted to.
So you're going to tell her straight up when she arrives, like, hey, sorry, not feeling it.
Yeah, I'll try to be nice about it. Like, typically what I do is I give the girl a hug and I say, hey, I got to tell you something. I'm really sorry. I'm just not feeling it. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'll try to, like, be softening it up as much as possible. But, yeah. But, yeah, right away.
I like that. That's a, you know, that's a tough situation, right? Especially for a lot of guys in game because they're, like, recovering nice guys. I've talked to so many clients who have, like, oh, she showed up, but she was fat, but... you know, I felt bad, so took her to dinner. Like, that's why you shouldn't do dinner dates in the first place.
Why don't you take a fat girl to dinner? That seems like the worst of worst all worlds.
Talk about a bad investment. So you're trying to screen them on Instagram, right? And
yeah, I'll ask to see their Instagram, or if they don't have it, I'll ask them to send me several selfies.
That's probably a pretty, like, how often do girls not have it? I feel like that's
pretty rare, but sometimes girls, like, are sneaky. They don't even have, like, you know, they have, like, those sneaky angles on their Instagram. So if I suspect, like, that something is off, then I'll be like, okay, can you send me another photo? And if, like, all else fails, I'll straight up be like, okay, this may sound, I'll send something like this. I'll be like, hey, I know this is a really random question, but I have a certain body type that I find attractive. Roughly speaking, how much do you weigh? Like, I'll straight up say that if, like, all else fails.
I guess you got to ask them their height too, right?
Well, that's the question that comes right after that.
Well, I mean, if she's more than like 130 pounds, regardless of how tall she is,
yeah.
It's a little dicey. So when I was going to ask you, I was in terms of like screening girls, is there anything else, like any other sort of red flags that you're looking for? If you're looking for a girl who's like more of a party girl or more of a girl who's likely to hook up, like, are there any sort of things that like give away on the profile that you would like, okay, I'm going to message this girl. I'm not going to message this girl. She seems like, let's say for example, I've seen so many girls that on Tinder or whatever they say, like not looking for a hookup, but those are the girls that hook up all the time. So
I don't know. The only other thing I might look for is like bipolar behavior, which is pretty rare. But if I think the girl's bipolar, I probably won't meet up with her. Because, you know, I don't want to, like, fuck with, like, the super crazy. But aside from that, yeah, no, like, everything else is more of, like, I'm going off the vibe and shit.
Anything else that we didn't talk about in terms of, like, building your profile or making sure your Instagram matches your profile? Like, are you're probably using a lot of the same pics as Crossfit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. There's some pics I have on Instagram that I wouldn't use on Tinder, but every pic I use on Tinder I would use on Instagram. No, I mean, I think that, like, you know, I would say this. Like, unless your Instagram is good, don't link your Instagram. Like, I think a lot of guys fuck themselves over by linking an Instagram that has, like, 50 followers and, like, 7 photos. You know, so unless your Instagram is, like, really solid, I would say leave it out. Don't link it.
Yeah, what if a guy has a good Instagram, but he just has, like, you know, less than 150 followers, or he's got a low follower count, but his Instagram's good because he's worked on it, for example?
Well, I think that's a little bit of an oxymoron. If you have a really good Instagram, you're probably going to have more than 150 followers just by you posting a lot and having, like, good posts. Like, people will follow you. But, like, okay, let's just say, like, 1,000 followers, right? You can have a good Instagram and have, like, 500 followers. Yeah, I think, like, the follower count is actually what matters the least. It's more about the quality of your posts. So a lot of people are, like, really worried about their followers. They're like, oh, dude, I'll follow you if you follow me. I'm like, dude, you're overthinking this. Like, the followers is not that important. Much has to do with the quality of your posts. But also, like, if you're, like, I know some guys buy followers, but if you have a situation where you have, like, 10,000 followers and each post is getting, like, 40 likes, like, girls can pick up on that. Like, you know, they're not dumb. So yeah. I would stay away from buying followers. You know, you could get away with that in, like, 2016, 2017, but everyone knows about that now. I wouldn't do that. Yeah, I would just focus on putting out quality posts.
So in terms of messaging, if a guy feels like he just sort of sucks at messaging, or he has, like, sort of no experience with that, you know, what would you recommend for that guy?
Focus on the fundamentals. A lot of guys just, like, get stuck up on, like, advanced things, like, oh, how can I get the girl to qualify herself? But, like, a lot of the stuff that you see is not really essential. Like, the fundamentals are opening, right, which is getting the conversation started, just banter / building investment, screening, going for the close, and then confirming. Those are the 5 fundamentals. Everything else is extra, right? So I would say focus on the fundamentals first, get those down, and then you can start building on that.
Do you typically use the same sort of openers? Like, do you have a list of favorite ones, or do you like how much time do you spend actually looking at her profile and trying to come up?
Very little time. Yeah, I do have like you know, I've done like these Tinder experiments where like I've tested like some of the popular openers on the internet, so I have like some pretty decent data on that. But typically, I'll just copy and paste like one opener.
Okay. Any particular one that you've seen the most success with?
It's changes. I mean, like, the one that I'm known for is Hey Trouble. That one's okay. I mean, You Seem Like My Type. That's a pretty good one. You can do, like, Can I Be Honest? And the girl's like, yeah. You seem like the perfect – you seem like my type. Or it can be like, you look like the nice combination. Or, like, this is a good one I learned about. I can't tell if you're innocent or an absolute baddie. That's, like, a pretty witty one. So, yeah, I don't know. There's just a bunch. But one is not, like – they're all, like, more or less similar. You know, those kind of one-liners.
Right.
Just don't say anything that's too long. Don't insult the girl. Don't overly validate the girl. And don't do pickup lines or anything that's cringe.
One of the lines that I used to use way back in the day with a lot of success was the, so does this mean we're exclusive?
Mm.
And then having that kind of go into a role play. But then, you know, that became, I feel like maybe, definitely people started using it. Have you felt that? Have you heard of that one?
Yeah.
And do you know if there's any lines that they're like played out too much?
Yeah, I use a variation of that. So I guess we're dating now.
Okay.
That was one of the lines in the experiment. I don't actually think there's any lines that are like too played out. I think whenever I've done the experiments, whenever I created a Tinder profile as a girl, you know, at first I thought like everyone's going to be saying, Hey Trouble, right? Because I felt like my channel was more popular than this. But in reality, most guys are just saying, hi, how's it going? Or they're writing an essay, or they're doing like a really cheesy pickup line. Like very few guys are actually using like these like short and sweet one-liners. It's mostly just like, hey, mm-hmm. Hey, how's it going? 5-paragraph text, or hey, you want to fuck, something like that. So yeah, I don't think there's actually any line that's like too played out to be used.
Okay, it's good to know. What else did you find? That's cool. You did an experiment like that, or multiple. It sounds like. What were the most interesting findings?
Just how bad the average profile and text game is. Like vast majority of guys just have really bad profiles and really bad texting skills. How needy a lot of guys are. I mean, I kind of always suspected that, but. I mean, you have guys that will just like quadruple text after an hour, you know?
What about the volume of like, how many messages were you getting per day?
Insane amounts. I mean, we've done this experiment. We took the photos of like a really obese girl and she still got like 500 matches in 24 hours or something. Yeah.
Seriously? Yeah. That's shocking. What are your thoughts on double texting? You know, I've seen some of your content where you'll do it in certain spots. Any sort of rules on when to double text, when to try to revive a conversation, or when to just kind of like leave it dead?
Yeah, I think double texting is fine as long as you wait a day or two. A lot of it has to do with just how, if you're double texting her an hour later, that's a bad move. But if you waited like a few days, I think it's fine. You know, I have like some follow-up tests that I use. So for example, if I ask the girl a question like, hey, do you want to grab drinks on Friday, and she hasn't responded, I might follow up with like, don't think too hard now, or don't worry, it's not a trick question. So I'll use kind of like a takeaway. Another one I like to use is, if you're too nervous, I'd understand. So it's basically like, you know, kind of playing into that, like, oh, you're just very nervous, right? And then girls will try to justify, no, I'm not nervous, blah, blah, blah. It was this thing, blah, blah. So yeah, I think double, even triple, even quadruple texting in certain situations is okay, as long as you're very patient and strategic about it.
Yeah, I feel like especially if you've got a decent amount of, like, not rapport, but you've had, like, a conversation with a girl where it seemed like it was kind of going well, but she just kind of vanished.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of the time it's just timing and waiting a bit. As long as you're not coming across needy, it can be all right. What about using memes, GIFs, emojis? What are kind of the do's and don'ts around those things?
I wouldn't overdo it. I think a lot of guys overdo emojis. It kind of looks feminine. But what I like to use emojis for is to soften the text. So if without the emoji, the text can seem like aggressive, that's when I'll put an emoji in there to like soften it, right? Because, you know, if like, okay, if you're talking to a girl in real life and you're making fun of her, right, she can tell by your smile and your body language that you're not actually being serious. Like if you're like, you're such a fat ass, right? Like, you know, she knows you're not being serious by your expression. That's very different than you're such a fat ass, right? Same exact words, totally different. But with text, you don't have that kind of nuance. So that's when I would add an emoji to kind of soften things. But I think guys way overdue it on emojis. Memes are fine, you know. As long, again, I wouldn't go crazy with it, but there's some really good memes that I like to use. Yeah, GIFs can be fine too. Again, I wouldn't overdo it. As a general rule of thumb, if you're sending more emojis, GIFs, and memes than the girl, then you're probably overdoing it.
Yeah, I feel like if you just mirror what she's doing, that's a pretty good rule of thumb. Yeah. What's the sweet spot you're looking for in terms of back and forth?
That's a common question I get. There's really no answer there. It can really run the gamut. But what I look for is, like, is the girl invested in the conversation? Meaning, is she, like, basically, it's exactly what it sounds like. Is the girl actually invested in the text conversation? If the answer is yes, then I'll just move things towards the meetup.
Like, would you start messaging with a girl? Like, let's say you're out of town, right? You're not coming back for, like, 2 weeks. Would you game girls online while you're gone, even though you're not going to be able to meet up with them for, like, a couple weeks? Or would you wait until you got back?
Me, personally, I probably would not, just because I'm just, like, too busy. But, like, yeah, I mean, it's probably advantageous to, you know, like, set up a bunch of leads before you get in. If I'm, like, traveling to a foreign country, I'll set my Tinder there a few days ahead of time. And by the time I get in, I already have, like, dates lined up. But, yeah, like, me personally, I just, like, I don't know, I usually just don't have time to do that. But, yeah, if you have the time, yeah, I think that's fine.
Okay. Yeah, I found that some guys, like, if you wait too long, you know, you can kind of, like, just, you lose the momentum.
Oh, you're talking about if you're already talking to a girl? Yeah, I think, like, just a little bit back and forth is fine. Like, just sending her, like, a, hey, how's your day going? Like, you know, like, maybe, like, yeah,
staying
just, like, very,
mind.
Very, like, basic surface level things is enough. I don't think you have to overdo it. I mean, here's a little tidbit. I think a lot of guys make the mistake when they close. So the kind of the framework I follow is, like, first soft close. So, for example, if I, like, let's say I'm trying to get you to come on my podcast, right? I could be like, hey, Robbie, do you want to come on my podcast Tuesday at 7? Or I could be like, hey, Robbie, we should do a podcast sometime soon. Which one of those are you going to be more likely to agree to? Obviously, the latter. So it's the same thing with dating. So I start off with a close. Hey, we should get a drink sometime soon, right? Get that compliance. Get the girl to say yes. Then figure out her schedule. Oh, cool. What's her availability like? Figure out what day she's free. Then you go for the hard close. Okay, cool. Let's do Tuesday at 7 then, right? So I think just like a lot of guys get sloppy and lazy on the close, but I think that you should soft close, figure out her schedule, and then you hard close.
Yeah, definitely. Because if like that's another thing I see all the time where guys are like, you free on, you know, Wednesday at 8? And she's like, no, I can't make that. And they're like, well, what about Thursday? And now you're in chase mode. And that's, you know, then you're fucked. Yeah, I like that. So it's soft close and then get the schedule and then hard close. What about in terms of following up? Like, let's say the date went great and you banged. Do you wait for her to ever follow up first? Do you always follow up after that?
I will always follow up later that night. I'll say that was hot and send her, like, a fire emoji. Yeah, for a variety of reasons. I think, one, sometimes a girl will feel used if you don't text her that night. So just to preempt that. Number two, just for your own safety. Like, you know, obviously 99.9% of the time you'll be fine, but there are some crazy chicks out there that, you know, might make shit up. But if you have a screenshot of her saying, yeah, I had a lot of fun with you, that's like your insurance policy. So it's just like, you know, if you're going through a lot of girls, like, it's just, it can't hurt, right? Again, I'm not like overly paranoid about that stuff, but.
No, that's smart. I was chuckling for a second, but that was from a different scenario. I was thinking not of the, you know, her calling the cops or anything. Yeah, you definitely want to. That's a great insurance thing. I was more thinking policy. I was thinking she was like so butthurt that you didn't call her back that she starts like, you know, becoming like a stage
five. Yeah, also, I just think like sending that text, like just the girl won't feel used. Like, I don't know. Like, I also like, I don't know, generally don't want to like put negative energy into the world. So what typically happens is like a guy goes on a date with a girl, he fucks her over, and she fucks over the next guy she meets, and just like this vicious cycle of everybody fucking everyone over. So I kind of like, I don't want to contribute to that cycle. That's why I try to be upfront. I text the girl. Like, even if I don't want to see the girl again, like, you know, I'll send a few texts back and forth at least, like, so she doesn't feel used.
What about spending the night? You usually kick them out or just kind of depends?
It depends. If I really like the girl, you know, it's just a preference. I personally don't like strangers, like, sleeping over. But if I really like her, you know, I might let her. If not, I'll very politely tell her that, you know, I can't.
How do you phrase that when, like, if she wants to spend the night and you're like,
hey, I'll just be like yeah, you know, that would be a lot of fun. It's just I have work really early tomorrow, and I can't really sleep well, you know, if there's someone else there, because I'm going to want to keep fucking you throughout the night. So I think, you know, maybe we should rain check, like something like that.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to do it. I find a lot of sometimes it's harder to find the words to kind of give them these soft landings. You know, guys can have a lot of trouble with that, so this is helpful.
Yeah.
Let's see. And then anything around, like, just like frequency, like seeing her again, like let's say you like her and you want to hook up with her again, do you try to like schedule her sooner rather than later?
Because you want to like rather than later. Yeah, if you wait too long, too much time flies. So I would try to see her like within a week if you want to mm-hmm. like, you know, make her your fuck buddy. Sooner, definitely sooner rather than later. Once you've seen her a few times though, then you can start spacing it out more, but I think in the beginning you should probably like not dilly dally too much.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Because if you wait too long, she's just going to go out and meet another guy, and then, like, you know, he's, like, first and foremost in her mind.
Cool. Any other thoughts, like, in terms of guys who are, you know, I really like your system, especially for guys who are, like, getting into game, because it teaches them to be, like, non-monogamous, where I see so many guys get into game, and then, you know, they're basically, like, girlfriending up the first girl that they bang. And then they just kind of fall back into the same old patterns, and they haven't really improved. And your system really forces guys to be more like honest and authentic about what they're looking for. Have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just comes down to what you want. A lot of guys lie to themselves about what they want, so they'll be like, they don't really want a relationship, but they're like, it's so hard dating, and this chick doesn't abuse me, so you know, they kind of do these backwards rationalizations. But yeah, I think, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with relationships. I'm currently in a relationship. But yeah, I think you should be honest about what you want. I don't think you should force it. I think you should let things develop naturally. I typically, every single relationship I've ever been in started off as a fuck buddy. So I think that's a pretty good starting point. It's very easy to go from being a fuck buddy to being in a relationship, but you can't really go from being in a relationship to being a fuck buddy, right? So you can always move in this direction, but you can't move in this direction. So I don't know. I would always say, like, kind of slow down, like, don't rush into things, because you can always, you know, move forward later, but you can't move backwards.
For sure. Cool, man. This has been super helpful. I know the guys listening are going to get a lot out of this. Anything else you wanted to mention? Obviously, like, drop your site and any sort of, you know, ways guys can find you or learn more.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, check out my YouTube channel, Playing With Fire. We have a lot of, like, really good free content. Or if you prefer, like, reading articles instead of watching videos, you go to playingfire.com. We have a tips and guides section. We have also a lot of, like, free value. But, yeah, I would say, like, those are the two best places to check me out.
Nice. And so what about you? You're in a relationship now?
I'm in a one-way open relationship, yeah. It's kind of an interesting situation. So, basically, yeah, like, we are emotionally exclusive to each other, but I can, like, hook up with other girls.
And she was, where'd you meet her?
I met her on Bumble, actually.
Any difference, I guess, in terms of Bumble? Like, girls have to start the conversation, mm-hmm. right? So do you find, like, my experience on Bumble, like, usually girls open the conversation with something pretty lame. just because, like most people would. Do you have any tips on, like, how to kind of follow up? Do you still, like, I mean, I'm guessing you can just pivot to one of your lines, like, yeah, hey trouble.
Yeah,
I think
it's all the same shit. Like, one follow-up text I use whenever a girl messages me, something like, hi, or hey, how are you? I'll say, I was waiting for you to message me with a winky face. I think that's like a good, like, little follow-up text you can use on Bumble.
Well, cool, man. It's been great. Appreciate you coming on and dropping your wisdom.
Thanks for having me on, bro. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.